Hello, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun for Wednesday, February the 19th. The headlines for the front page: judge declines request for curtailing DOGE. Appeals court blocks Biden-era student debt relief plan. And Leonard Peltier released from prison after nearly 50 years. Going to the first article, judge declines request to curtail DOGE. A judge on Tuesday declined to immediately block an entity formed by President Donald Trump and spearheaded by Elon Musk from directing firings of federal workers or accessing databases for seven agencies. The judge did say the case raises legitimate questions about Musk's apparent unchecked authority. Washington-based U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan denied for now a request to be more than a dozen states for a judicial order barring the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, from accessing computer systems at federal agencies or purging government workers while litigation plays out. Musk, the world's wealthiest person, spearheads DOGE, which has taken the lead role in carrying out the Republican president's plans for downsizing and overhauling the federal government. In her decision, Chutkan wrote that the state's legitimate call into question what appears to be the unchecked authority of an unelected individual and an entity that was not created by Congress and over which it has no oversight. But the judge said the states had not shown why they were entitled to an immediate restraining order. Chutkan could eventually rule in favor of the states, but said in her ruling that their request for an emergency court order was too broad and speculative. Democratic attorneys general from the states that sued argued that the actions of DOGE had put the ability of these states to carry out educational and other programs at risk. The states have argued that Musk wields the kind of power that can be exercised only by an officer of the government who has been nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate under language in the U.S. Constitution called the Appointments Clause. They also have said DOGE itself has not been authorized by Congress. The lawsuit seeks to bar DOGE from accessing information systems at the Departments of Labor, Education, Health and Human Services, Energy, Transportation and Commerce, and the Office of Personnel Management. The states also asked Chutkan, as appointed by Democratic former President Barack Obama, to prevent Musk and his DOGE team members from firing federal employees or putting them on leave. The lawsuit accused Musk's team of unlawful accessing data at federal agencies and directing a purge of the 2.3 million strong federal workforce. It was filed by more than a dozen states and announced by state attorneys general from New Mexico, Michigan, and Arizona. Representatives for the White House and for the attorneys general did not immediately respond to requests for comment. DOGE has swept through federal agencies, slashing thousands of jobs and dismantling various programs since Trump returned to office last month and put Musk in charge of rooting out what they see as wasteful spending as part of the president's dramatic overhaul of government. An attorney for the administration told Chutkan on February 14th that he had not been able to confirm mass government layoffs took place. Around 20 lawsuits have been filed in various federal courts challenging Musk's authority, in which he have led to mixed results. U.S. District Judge Jeanette Vargas in New York extended a temporary block on DOGE on Friday that prevented Musk's team from accessing Treasury systems responsible for trillions of dollars of payments. But also on Friday, U.S. District Judge John Bates in Washington declined a request by unions and nonprofits to temporarily block Musk's team from accessing records at the Departments of Labor and Health and Human Services, as well as Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Most of the judges handling DOGE cases have not issued rulings. Now moving to our next article, Appeals Court Blocks Biden-Era Student Debt Relief Plan. A U.S. appeals court ruled on Tuesday that Democratic former President Joe Biden's administration lacked authority to pursue a student debt relief program designed to lower monthly payments for millions of borrowers and speed up loan forgiveness for some. The St. Louis-based 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals sided with seven Republican-led states that sued to block the U.S. Education Department's program, whose future was already in doubt with President Donald Trump back in the White House. The three-judge panel held that Education Department exceeded its authority by trying to use a Higher Education Act provision that allows for income-based loan repayment plans to adopt debt forgiveness on the scale provided by Biden's Saving on a Valuable Education plan. That program was designed to provide more generous terms than past income-based repayment plans, with monthly payments dropping for some borrowers to as low as zero. It also provided debt forgiveness for some smaller loans in as few as 10 years, compared to the 20 or 25-year timeline under earlier rules. U.S. Circuit Judge L. Stevens Graza, appointed by Trump during his first term in office, said the Higher Education Act's text made clear that Congress only authorized repayment plans that lead to actual repayment of student loans. Graz, whose opinion was joined by two fellow Republican-appointed judges, said the Biden administration had gone well beyond this authority by designing a plan where loans are largely forgiven rather than repaid. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, the Republican who led the litigation, said on X that while Biden is out of office, this president is imperative to ensuring a president cannot force working Americans to foot the bill for someone else's Ivy League debt. The ruling marked another legal setback to Biden's efforts to address what his White House described as a broken student debt system that can financially burden U.S. residents seeking higher education. In 2023, U.S. Supreme Court blocked Biden's earlier plan to cancel $430 billion in student loan debt. It's a move that had been intended to benefit up to 43 million Americans and fulfill a campaign promise. Following that ruling, Biden's administration sought to continue providing student debt relief through other means, announcing by the time he left office $183.6 billion in student loan forgiveness for more than 5 million borrowers. Moving to our next article, Leonard Peltier released from prison after another 50 years. Native American activist Leonard Peltier, convicted of killing two FBI agents and incarcerated for nearly five decades while maintaining his innocence, was released Tuesday from a Florida prison. Former President Joe Biden had commuted Peltier's sentence. Peltier's supporters, ranging from tribal leaders to figures such as the Dalai Lama and Robert Redford, long pushed for his freedom, arguing he was falsely convicted in an unfair trial. A global system of the struggle for indigenous people's rights, Peltier was freed from a federal detention center in Coleman, North Florida at around 9 a.m., according to a Reuters witness. He departed in a car, which is part of a motorcade, and did not speak to supporters or media. "Today I'm finally free. They may have imprisoned me, but they never took my spirit," Peltier said in a statement provided by the NDN Collective Activist Group. Peltier, a member of Yurtle Mountain Chapter Tribe, was partially blind and in poor health, suffering from diabetes and heart trouble. The 80-year-old will be allowed to live under house arrest. A homecoming celebration is planned for Peltier on Tuesday at the Turtle Mountain Reservation in Belcourt, North Dakota. The commutation granted by Biden on his last day of office was long opposed by the FBI. Former agency director Christopher Wray called Peltier a remorseless killer. His supporters said prosecutors withheld critical evidence that would have been favorable to Peltier and fabricated affidavits that painted him guilty. Just as his wrongful incarceration represents the oppression of indigenous peoples everywhere, his release today is a symbol of our collective power and inherent freedom. Nick Tilson, NDN Collective founder and CEO, said in the release. Peltier was among a group of Native American men who traded gunfire with FBI special agents Jack Kohler and Ronald Williams on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota in June 1975. The agents who had gone to the reservation in search of a fugitive were killed, along with one of the Native American activists. Peltier, part of a movement upholding Native American treaty rights with the U.S. government, has maintained he did not shoot Kohler and Williams. Peltier fled to Canada before his 1977 trial. He was eventually extradited back to the United States, found guilty, and given two life sentences. Leonard Peltier's release is the right thing to do, given the serious and ongoing human rights concerns about the fairness of his trial, his nearly 50 years behind bars, his health, and his age, said Paul O'Brien, executive director at Amnesty International USA. Moving to our next article, U.S.-Russia forge ahead on peace discussion without Ukraine. Riyadh. President Donald Trump's administration on Tuesday said it agreed to hold more talks with Russia on ending the war in Ukraine after an initial meeting that excluded Kyiv. As the four-and-a-half-hour meeting in Saudi Arabia capital was underway, Russia stiffened its demands, notably insisting it will not tolerate the NATO alliance granting membership to Kyiv. Later on Tuesday, Trump said he was more confident after the talks and he would probably meet with Putin before the end of the month. Russia wants to do something, Trump told reporters in Palm Beach, Florida. He brushed aside Ukraine's concerns about being left out of the meeting and said Kyiv should have entered the talks much earlier. I think I have the power to end this war, said Trump. The talks in Riyadh were the first time U.S. and Russia officials met to discuss ways to halt the deadliest conflict in Europe since World War II. Ukraine has said it will not accept any deal imposed without its consent, and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz reiterated there must be no decision over the heads of Ukraine. Even before the talks took place, some European politicians accused Trump's administration of handling free concessions to Moscow last week by ruling out NATO membership for Ukraine and saying it was an illusion for Kyiv to believe they could win back the 20% of its territory now under Russian control. U.S. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz told reporters in Riyadh the war must come to an end and that would involve negotiations over territory. Just a practical reality is that there's going to be some discussion of territory, and there's going to be discussion of security guarantees, he said. High-level teams are to begin talks on ending the conflict and would work separately to restore each nation's respective diplomatic missions in Washington and Moscow, the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said. Rubio said he came away from the initial talks convinced that Russia was willing to begin to engage in a serious process, but that reaching peace would involve concessions from all sides. Russia officials did not mention offering any concessions, and U.S. officials did not claim to have scored any in Tuesday's meeting, leading observers to doubt whether the talks would turn into serious peace negotiations. Addressing Ukraine and European concerns, Rubio said no one is being sidelined and any solution must be acceptable to all parties. Rubio later spoke to the top diplomats of France, Germany, Italy, Britain, and the EU to brief them on the talks, State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce said. Both sides said no date had been set for a meeting between Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin, which both men say they want. Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky said he had postponed a visit to Saudi Arabia planned for Wednesday. Sources familiar with the matter said the decision was made to avoid giving legitimacy to the U.S.-Russia talks. Kyiv said discussions on how to end the war should not be held behind Ukraine's back. As European countries discuss the possibility of contributing peacekeepers to back any Ukraine peace deal, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said in Riyadh that Moscow would not accept deployment of NATO troops there, whatever flag they were operating under. "Of course, this is unacceptable to us," he said. The comments by Lavrov signaled that Russia will keep pressing for further concessions. The opening encounter on Tuesday had Lavrov and Kremlin foreign policy aide Yuri Yuskov negotiating with three Trump administrative officials in their first month on the job. "So far, I have seen zero evidence that Putin is willing to give one inch in order to negotiate a peace deal," Michael McFaul, who served as U.S. ambassador to Russia under former President Barack Obama, wrote on X, "All I see instead are ideas floated by the U.S. of concessions that Ukraine, NATO, and U.S. are supposed to make." Now moving to our next article, AI hallucinations in court documents spell trouble for lawyers. U.S. personal injury law firm Morgan & Morgan sent an urgent email this month to its more than 1,000 lawyers. "Artificial intelligence can invent fake case law, and using made-up information in a court filing could get you fired." A federal judge in Wyoming had threatened to sanction two lawyers at the firm who included fictitious case citations in a lawsuit against Walmart. One of the lawyers admitted in court filings last week that he used an AI program that hallucinated the cases and apologized for what he called an inadvertent mistake. AI's penchant for generating legal fiction in case filings had led courts around the country to question or discipline lawyers in at least seven cases over the last 2 years, and created a new high-tech headache for litigants and judges, Reuters found. The Walmart case stands out because it involves a well-known law firm and a big corporate defendant, but examples like it have cropped up in all kinds of lawsuits since chatbots like ChatGPT ushered in the AI era, highlighting a new litigation risk. A Morgan & Morgan spokesperson did not respond to a request for comment. Walmart declined to comment. The judge has not yet ruled whether to discipline the lawyers in the Walmart case, which involved an allegedly defective hoverboard toy. Advances in generative AI are helping reduce the time lawyers need to research and draft legal briefs, leading many law firms to contract with AI vendors to build their own AI tools. 63% of lawyers surveyed by Reuters' parent company Thomson Reuters last year said they have used AI for work, and 12% they used it regularly. Generative AI, however, is known to confidently make up facts, and lawyers who use it must take caution, legal experts say. AI sometimes produces false information, known as hallucinations, in the industry because the models generate responses based on statistical patterns learned from large data sets rather than by verifying facts in those data sets. Attorney ethics rules require lawyers to vet and stand by their court filings or risk being disciplined. The American Bar Association told its 400,000 members last year that these obligations extend to even an unintentional misstatement produced through AI. The consequences have not changed just because legal research tools have evolved, said Andrew Perlman, dean of Suffolk University's Law School, an advocate of using AI to enhance legal work. When lawyers are caught using ChatGPT or any generative AI tool to create citations without checking them, that's incompetence, just pure and simple, Perlman said. In one of the earliest court rebukes over attorneys' use of AI, a federal judge in Manhattan in June 2023 fined two New York lawyers $5,000 for citing cases that were invented by AI in a personal injury case against an airline. A different New York federal judge last year considered imposing sanctions in a case involving Michael Cohen, the former lawyer and fixer for Donald Trump, who said he mistakenly gave his own attorney fake case citations that the attorney submitted in Cohen's criminal tax and campaign finance case. Cohen, who used Google's AI chat box Bard, and his lawyer were not sanctioned, but the judge called the episode embarrassing. In November, a Texas federal judge ordered a lawyer who cited non-existent cases and quotations in a wrongful termination lawsuit to pay a $2,000 penalty and attend a course about generative AI in the legal field. A federal judge in Minnesota last month said a misinformation expert had destroyed his credibility with the court after he admitted to unintentionally citing fake AI-generated citations in a case involving a deep fake parody of Vice President Kamala Harris. Harry Sudan, a law professor at the University of Colorado's Law School, who studies AI and the law, said he recommends lawyers spend time learning the strengths and weaknesses of the tools. He said the mounting examples show a lack of AI literacy in the profession, but the technology itself is not the problem. Lawyers have always made mistakes in their filings before AI, he said. This is not new. Our next article. The USDA will not ban cattle imports from Mexico over screwworm cases. U.S. Department of Agriculture will not restrict cattle imports from Mexico after another discovery of a damaging pest called New World screwworm in an animal south of the border, the agency said Tuesday. U.S. cattle supplies tightened in recent months after Washington in late November blocked Mexican livestock shipments over the discovery of screwworm in a cow in Mexico. Another case of screwworm was found in a cow in Mexico's Tabasco state last week, according to the World Organization for Animal Health. The pest can infest livestock, wildlife, and in rare cases, people. Maggots from screwworm flies burrow into the skin of living animals, causing serious and often fatal damage. The USDA said on February 1 it would lift the ban it imposed in November under new protocols to assess the health of animals before they enter the U.S. from Mexico. The agency will not take additional action based on the latest detection, USDA said on Tuesday in response to a question about whether it would halt imports again. The comprehensive pre-clearance inspection and treatment protocol is now in place and will ensure safe movement of cattle and bison into the United States and mitigate the threat of New World screwworm, USDA said. The latest discovery pushed up feeder cattle futures in the Chicago Mercantile Exchange as some traders anticipated USDA might halt imports from Mexico again. U.S. cattle supplies are at their lowest level in 74 years, and beef prices are high after ranchers slashed their herds because drought reduced the amount of land available for grazing. Moving to some articles across the American West, measure would allow police to shoot down cartel drones. This is from the Arizona Mirror. Amid an increase in drug cartel drones flying over Arizona's southern border, GOP lawmakers and the Democratic Attorney General say local police should be able to shoot them out of the sky without fear of a lawsuit. That's precisely what a proposal by Representative David Marshall, Republican snowflake, would do. His House Bill 2733 would give local law enforcement immunity from liability for damage to personal property if they are shooting down a drone they believe is engaged in criminal activity. But even if state law is expanded, federal law bans shooting at any type of aircraft, including drones. Attorney General Chris Mays, who said she worked with Marshall on the proposal, said it's a critical change to the law that will directly aid in combating the flow of drugs into Arizona. These drones are on an increase, Mays said at a February 17 press conference, telling reporters that cartels have been using them to both transport drugs and conduct surveillance on Border Patrol agents. Airspace around the borders of the United States is heavily controlled and monitored by the U.S. military and the Federal Aviation Administration. NORAD has previously reported that drone incursions at the southern border have seen a marked increase as inexpensive consumer drones have proliferated. When asked if Mays or the bill sponsor had spoken with either the FAA or NORAD about the proposed legislation, Mays said they plan to reach out. The FAA told the Arizona Mirror that it's against federal law to shoot at an aircraft. An unmanned aircraft hit by gunfire could crash, causing damage to persons or property on the ground, or it could collide with other objects in the air, the FAA said in a statement. Shooting at an unmanned aircraft could result in a civil penalty from the FAA and or criminal charges from federal, state, or local law enforcement. The FAA did not respond to questions about whether it opposes the bill. NORAD did not respond to repeated requests for comment. Mays and Marshall dismissed concerns about possible damage to personal property or accidental shooting of drones that do not belong to the cartels. "There's nothing good happening on the border at midnight," Marshall said, adding that drone incursions occur mainly at night. "I believe and trust our law enforcement to do the right thing and shoot these drones down in a safe location," Mays said, later adding that law enforcement should blow them out of the sky. Drones have long been a growing concern for both local and federal law enforcement at the border. Customs and Border Protection uses specialized drone jammers to disable unmanned aircraft that are flying illegally. Drones have also been spotted at critical facilities, including an incursion involving a drone swarm at the Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant in 2019. Mays said that she would be interested in getting drone jammers to local law enforcement as well as to critical facilities across the state to combat this growing concern. Drones have proliferated in the past few years, with multiple users for law enforcement, firefighting, and even land surveying. It is unclear how the measure would account for drones operating legally within the border region. Our next article, U.S. Attorney for New Mexico resigns. New Mexico U.S. Attorney Alexander M.M. Obales has announced his resignation, which he said came at the request of President Donald J. Trump, reportedly one of more than 20 U.S. attorneys the administration has asked to step down. Nominated by President Joseph R. Biden on January the 26th, 2022, U.S. Senate confirmed him on May 17 of that year. A news release announcing his departure highlighted Obales' work in the Project Safe Neighborhood Project, as well as his outreach to tribal communities and efforts to modernize the office. "Today I say farewell to a department I love," Obales said in a statement. "Together we have made our community safer by delivering swift and certain justice to most prolific violent offenders, human and drug traffickers, and child abusers. We have saved lives by intervening to prevent violence, by supporting those who strive to return to our community from incarceration. Most importantly, we fought to build a community united in the pursuit of justice for all by choosing prevention before punishment, delivering consequences but not indignity, and seeking redemption, not isolation. Moving to some international articles, Pope Francis may have double pneumonia, Vatican said. Vatican City. Pope Francis has shown the onset of double pneumonia, further complementing treatment for the 88-year-old pontiff, the Vatican said Tuesday. The laboratory tests, chest x-ray, and clinical conditions of the Holy Father continue to present a complex picture, said a statement. A chest CAT scan, which the Holy Father received this afternoon, showed the onset of bilateral pneumonia. It requires further pharmacological therapy, it added. Nevertheless, Pope Francis remains in good spirits, the statement said. Bilateral pneumonia is an infection that affects both lungs and can make breathing difficult. Francis has been suffering from a respiratory infection for more than a week and was admitted to Rome's Gemelli Hospital on February the 14th. He is especially prone to lung infections because as a young adult, he developed pleurisy and had part of one lung removed. A Vatican official speaking on background earlier in the day said the pontiff had not been put on a ventilator and was breathing on his own. Ahead of the latest statement, the Vatican announced that all public events on the Pope's calendar had been canceled through Sunday. The Pope had been due to lead several events over the weekend for the 2025 Catholic Holy Year, which runs through to next January. It is a special time of pardon and forgiveness for Catholics, and the Vatican expects 32 million tourists to visit Rome throughout the year, including for a range of special audiences with Francis. The Vatican said on Monday that doctors had changed the Pope's drug therapy for the second time during his hospital stay to tackle a complex clinical situation. They described it as a polymicrobial infection of the respiratory tract. Doctors say polymicrobial infection occurs when two or more microorganisms are involved and can be caused by bacteria, viruses, or fungi. The Vatican has said Francis will stay in the hospital for as long as necessary. It is not specified whether the Pope is suffering from a bacterial or viral infection. While a bacterial infection can be treated with antibiotics, viral infections cannot. Viruses usually have to run their course, but the patient can be assisted with other medicines to bring down a fever or help their body to fight the infection. Our next article, China supports all Ukraine peace efforts, Wang says. China supports all efforts conducted to peace talks in Ukraine, China's foreign minister Wang Yi told the United Nations Security Council on Tuesday and stressed that Gaza and the West Bank are not a bargaining chip in political trade-offs. After Russia and the U.S. officials met in Saudi Arabia on Tuesday and agreed to press ahead with efforts to end the war in Ukraine, Wang told the Security Council China supports all efforts conducted to peace talks. He said Beijing will continue to follow 4 points outlined by China President Xi Jinping on what should be done. China's official Xinhua news agency listed these as respect for the sovereignty and territory integrity of all countries, observance of the purpose and principles of the UN Charter, paying due regard to legitimate security concerns of all countries, and supporting efforts conducted to the peaceful settlement of the crisis. Wang chaired a meeting of the 15-member Security Council on multilateralism because China is president for February. You're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun from Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. You can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Now moving to some sports news. Record 182.8 million viewers saw Super Bowl LIX. A record 182.8 million unique viewers tuned into Super Bowl LIX for at least 1 minute, according to Nielsen data released Tuesday. Nielsen previously announced that the Philadelphia Eagles' 40-22 win against the Kansas City Chiefs on February 9 in New Orleans averaged a record 127.7 million viewers across Fox, Fox Deportes, Telemundo, and streaming services. The higher numbers announced Tuesday are from Nielsen's Big Data Plus panel reach methodology. The new metric more precisely measures out-of-home viewing, according to Nielsen. Moving to some business articles, stock exchange slides as Fed policy assessed. Wall Street dipped on Tuesday. Investors showed little conviction at the top of a holiday-shortened week, with a wind-down in earnings seasons and geopolitical and trade uncertainties holding risk appetite in check. The three major stock indices wobbled between red and green for much of the session, but slipped into negative territory in the afternoon, weighed by Meta platforms Amazon, Com, and Alphabet. Our next article, Boeing's Air Force One program could be delayed until at least 2029. Air Force One program may be further delayed until at least 2029, a senior administrative official said. The source cited supply chain issues and changing requirements after the White House said the project failed to deliver a new plane on time over the weekend. The delays are frustrating, but not much can be done to speed delivery, the official told Reuters, noting that Boeing faced problems getting components since some manufacturers had gone out of business. Some requirements for the aircraft had also changed, giving evolving potential threats, the official said. Boeing referred questions about the schedule of the program, known as VC-25B, to the U.S. Air Force, which is not immediately available for comment. Clearly, the president would like the airplane earlier, and so we're working to see what could be done to accomplish that, Boeing CEO Kelly Ortberg told Reuters in January. The first aircraft was slated for delivery in December of 2024, but Boeing has pushed its delivery to 2027 at minimum toward the end of Trump's second term in office. Digital magazine Breaking Defense in December reported that the presidential aircraft program faced new delays that could push delivery of the first jet to 2029 or later. Asked about the report, the administration official acknowledged the fresh delays and delay could stretch years beyond 2029. U.S. President Donald Trump has been deeply engaged with the program since his 2016 presidential campaign, exacting a promise from then-Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg to cap the program's cost at $4 billion. These fixed-price contract terms, questioned by analysts at the time and finalized in 2018, have cost Boeing over $2 billion so far. Trump's renewed engagement could signal further problems for Boeing, whose current Otterberg said the company was meeting with Trump's billionaire cross-cutting ally Elon Musk to get the plane updated quicker, analysts said. Our next article, Ford slashes manager stock bonuses to cut costs, boost performance. Detroit, about half the middle managers at Ford will not get stock bonuses in 2025. It's considered internally as CEO Jim Farley's latest attempt to cut the automaker's bloated expenses, according to six people familiar with the situation.
The stock awards are usually paid in March, but senior managers have been told to select which half of their middle management staff will receive them, four of the sources said. Ford said the change was meant to incentivize an improvement in employee performance. We are focused on driving a high-performance culture that recognizes and rewards employees for their business contributions, a Ford spokesperson said. The Dearborn, Michigan automaker has struggled with inefficient operations within both its cash-burning electric vehicle division and its fuel-powered vehicle business. Farley has for years told employees and Wall Street that Ford is undergoing a fundamental transformation to become leaner and more competitive as it races against U.S. rivals as well as China automakers and EV producer Tesla. Ford stock slipped about 23% over the last year, while Detroit rival General Motors shares rose around 23% on the strength of lower costs and higher profits. Moving to an article from The Arts, Taylor Swift wins Recording Artist of the Year crown for fifth time. Taylor Swift has been named Global Recording Artist of the Year for 2024 by IFPI, the fifth time she has won the honor from the organization that represents the recording music industry. The megastars, the Tortured Poets Department record, also topped four IFPI chart global album, global vinyl album, global streaming album, and global album sales, IFPI said Tuesday. It had a strong lead on the 2024 global album sales chart, which calculates physical purchases and full album downloads, with 5.6 million units. K-pop group ENHYPEN's Romance Untold took the second spot with 3.4 million units sold. Swift's record-breaking Eras Tour, the first to surpass $1 billion in revenue, also boosted interest in her past records, with several appearing in the 2024 vinyl album and streaming album charts, the IFPI said. This has been a huge year for Taylor, and it has been incredible to see the extent to which fans all over the world are connecting with her superb catalog of music. Our next article, cuts to wildfire crews could have scary consequences. President Donald Trump's move to slash the federal workforce have gutted the ranks of wildland firefighters and support personnel, fire professionals warn, leaving communities to face deadly consequences when big blazes arrive this summer. There's going to be firefighters that die because of this. There will be communities that burn, said Stephen Gutierrez, a union official who served 15 years as a firefighter with the U.S. Forest Service. Gutierrez now serves as a labor relations representative with National Federation of Federal Employees, which represents government workers. He said thousands of wildland firefighters have had their jobs thrown into limbo by Trump's government-wide hiring freeze. Brian Fency, chief of Orange County Fire Authority and president of the California Fire Chiefs Association, echoed that concern. The public needs to know they're at risk, Tennessee said. If the public knew all of this, they would lose their minds. Federal agencies depend on an army of seasonal firefighters to fill their ranks during the months when wildfires are most active. Scott, a Forest Service firefighter with 6 years of experience in the western United States, who asked to be identified by a pseudonym to avoid retaliation, is among those whose role has been thrown into uncertainty. It's just going to be a disaster for the wildfire response this season. Scott was slated to move to a new Forest Service fire station this spring, but following the federal hiring freeze, he was told by his captain that it's unclear whether his new job still exists. Thousands of his colleagues are in a similar state of limbo. In a statement to Stateline, the Forest Service said wildland firefighting jobs are considered public safety positions that are exempt from the hiring freeze, and the agency is working with the Federal Office of Personnel Management on those positions. The agency did not respond to follow-up questions about the number of unfilled positions under review. U.S. Department of Interior and Bureau of Indian Affairs did not grant state line interview requests. Federal agencies deployed more than 17,000 wildland fire staffers last year, many of them in seasonal roles. This year, many of those workers had job offers rescinded as they were set to begin onboarding and training for the 2025 fire season. Trump's initiative to cut the federal workforce is led by his newly created commissioner dubbed the Department of Government Efficiency, helmed by Elon Musk. Aside from the hiring freeze, the Forest Service fired an additional 3,400 staffers last week, many of whom provided critical support for wildfire operations. Meanwhile, Trump's freeze on federal spending has cut off funding for projects as prescribed burns to reduce future risk. Wildfire officials offered mixed reports on whether that funding has been restored in the wake of judicial rulings. We're watching a valuable federal partner in wildland fire suppression go into this fire season unnecessarily handicapped, said Thomas Kyle Millward, wildfire communications manager with the Washington State Department of Natural Resources. That's concerning. States, tribes, and fire chiefs are all watching the situation closely. Officials said they're preparing for a fire season in which they may have minimal federal support, while they plead with Trump to reverse course quickly. They fear much of the damage may be irreversible. Many wildland fire officials note that seasonal workers will likely move on to other jobs if their position with the federal agency is in doubt. If there's not enough federal firefighters, that affects everybody in the state, said Jake Rhodes, fire chief of Buckeye Fire Medical Rescue Department in the Phoenix suburbs and president of the Arizona Fire Chiefs Association. That's scary for me. Rhodes and others noted that firefighters need significant training and qualifications to fill leadership positions. Trump's actions have delayed that onboard process. As a result, engine crews could be grounded this summer because they don't have a certified leader, or teams could be sent into harm's way without the proper training. Wildland fire response in the U.S. is a collaborative effort shared by a variety of entities, from tiny local fire districts to massive federal agencies. In western states especially, the feds play a critical role. Agencies manage a vast landscape of national forests, national parks, and Bureau of Land Management parcels. The Bureau of Indian Affairs also provides wildfire response on tribal reservations. While state agencies have invested heavily in their own wildfire crews, they said the federal agencies are critical partners. If they're unable to fill the majority of their positions, it would have an impact on everybody this summer, said Vaughn Jones, wildland fire manager, section chief with the Division of Fire Prevention and Control in the Colorado Department of Public Safety. We have to partner with them every day of every fire season. Trump's orders have thrown those agencies into chaos. I hear it multiple times a day from folks who are applying for jobs, from folks who are trying to fill positions, and they're all getting stymied, said Bobby Scopa, executive secretary with the Grassroots Wildland Firefighters, a nonprofit that advocates for federal staffers. These folks are worried about their families and paying the mortgage, and they're worried about their physical safety if they're going to be responding to fires with a crew that's not staffed up all the way. Federal firefighters collaborated that account. They're saying there's a public safety exemption, and that's a blatant lie because I'm a wildland firefighter and my job has been frozen, said Scott, the Forest Service employee. Scott and many of his colleagues were among the 3,400 Forest Service employees fired last week, while the agency said those cuts do not include firefighters. Wildland fire experts note that many staffers in other roles hold wildfire certifications and serve on the line during fire season, and nearly all of them play critical support roles for the agency fire response. Moving to some health articles, pressure continues to build on prescription drug middlemen. A wide group of plaintiffs in a national insulin pricing lawsuit are seeking to add a group of shadow companies set up by health conglomerates as they argue that two layers of prescription drug middlemen are illegally inflating the price of the life-saving medicines. Meanwhile, one of the biggest of the conglomerates, CVS Health, last week announced better-than-anticipated profits as his CEO complained that criticism of the drug middleman was unfair. A large group of state and local governments, unions, companies, pension funds are suing the three middlemen that control access to about 80% of insured patients in the United States. They're also suing the three companies that make almost all of the insulin sold in the country. The suit claims that the drug makers and the middlemen conspired to raise prices and profits from the drug, which many diabetes need to survive. In 2024, federal trade commissions filed a lawsuit against the middlemen, making similar complaints. Meanwhile, litigation and legislation has been filed across the United States against the middlemen and their corporate parents, alleging that they artificially raise prices on a wide swath of drugs so they can make more money. Known as pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs, the middlemen represent insurers in drug transactions. They create networks of pharmacies and determine how much to reimburse them, including pharmacies they own and other competitors. Independent pharmacies have long complained that the big PBMs, parent companies, have used that opaque and possible conflicting process to drive them out of business. Importantly, the big PBMs also decide which drugs to cover with insurance and which to give preferential treatment, often in the form of the lowest co-payments. Drug makers want their products to be covered, so they pay the PBMs huge, often non-transparent fees and discounts to get them on the list, known as formularies, and to get preferential treatment. The lawsuits against the companies CVS Health, United Health Group, and Cigna Express Scripts accuse them of excluding cheaper forms of insulin from the formularies in pursuit of ever higher payments from drug makers. This has the effect of unfairly driving up prices. FTC, state and local governments, and self-funded insurers all say. Now the plaintiffs in the multi-district suit filed by the state and local governments and other self-funded groups seek to sue yet another set of middlemen created over the past 5 years by the health conglomerates. Called group purchasing organizations, they negotiate rebates on PBM's behalf. Two are headquartered overseas, and their critics say they were created to hide their business behind yet another black curtain amid increasing scrutiny of the industry. They also claim it's a way to extract even more fees and make more money. The group purchasing organizations retain billions in additional fees from manufacturers and obscure the payment trail of rebates that rightfully belong to self-funded payers. Mark Pifko, co-led counsel in the litigation, said in a statement. FTC is suing the purchasing organizations on similar grounds. Amid lawsuits from the feds and every other level of government, CVS last week reported $4.6 billion in profit for 2024, beating expectations and sending its stock price soaring. On the earnings call, CEO David Joyner took the unusual step of complaining that those governmental entities that were suing were picking on his company. One of the most powerful forces helping to offset rising health care costs is PBMs like CVS's Caremark, Joyner said, according to Fierce Healthcare. These entities remain the only part of the drug supply chain that is entirely focused on lowering costs, but have erroneously been subject to deceptive rhetoric and misinformation. However, CVS and the other two health conglomerates have refused to make public all of the data relating to pricing, pharmacy reimbursements, fees, and manufacturing discounts, so no one can know if the companies are offsetting rising health care costs or adding to them. Even so, Joyner complained that others were cherry-picking data. So when you look at all the data, not cherry-picking data points like those specifically referenced in FTC interim reports, the conclusion is clear. PBMs deliver savings to their clients, he said. Caremark has been and continues to be a critical solution to help ensure Americans pay less for drugs. Now, our last article, Virginia lawmakers send contraception bill to the governor. A bill establishing the right to access and use FDA-approved contraceptives in Virginia is headed to Governor Glenn Youngkin following approval from both the Senate and House of Delegates as the 2025 General Assembly session approaches its final week. The Senate on Tuesday passed the final version, 21-19, before sending it to the governor for consideration. It protects the right of people to use and doctors to prescribe contraception. That's all the time we have for the Arizona Daily Sun. For Sun Sounds of Arizona and Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Gary, thanks for listening.